Why should you, as an American, engage in national politics? Why should you, as a Californian, engage in statewide politics? Why should you, as a Christian, engage in politics at all? I'm your host, Tess Abraham, and welcome to this very first episode of the California Conversation. Do you believe that your life, your decisions, and your values have an impact on the state of politics and culture in America? Do you believe that you personally have the power to make a difference in the world around you? I believe there's a growing sentiment in our culture that our participation in politics is not required to preserve our freedoms. There's a widening gap between what we think philosophically and how we act functionally. The ways that we act prove out that we functionally believe the freedoms afforded to us will always exist. We pursue and get busy living our lives. We go to work. We attend church. We spend time with friends and family. We also seek entertainment or scroll on our phones or plan our next vacation. And none of these things are bad. They're meant to be enjoyed in freedom. But we operate on the basis of freedom without thinking about our role in upholding it. Clarence Thomas said, "Freedom and responsibility are equally yoked. Only when they are in tandem can we cultivate the vast field of opportunity and have an orderly society. Freedom requires about as much courage to live with as it does to get. Yet, while we enjoy our freedoms, we often choose either not to be informed or not to vote. We'll look at some voter statistics in a minute, but voter turnout is low in America. Philosophically, we know that men and women have died for our rights, but functionally, we don't live as though our actions uphold them. We wake up in the morning and we have the freedom to say what we want or practice what religion we want, and we go about our day and do nothing to preserve those realities. We do not act like what we do or don't do has any effect on our government. But the truth is that our freedom has everything to do with our actions, or even more so with our inaction. Why? Why do our actions matter? Well, we live in a representative democracy. And I'm sure that you know that. I'm sure you've heard the word democracy used a lot these days. But it's really important to understand what that means for us and how it shapes our participation in government. From our nation's inception, America was different from all of her counterparts in the world, because it was here that our founding fathers first established a country where its citizens had certain rights that transcended the government. What makes us so different? The government protects our rights rather than creates them. Our government was founded upon the voices of the people rather than the voices of the few who would lead the people. We elect our government leaders, and they're elected to represent our ideas. And this means that our participation is not just a mere example of good civics, it's required. Think about it. If we don't elect our leaders, or if we don't know the ideas we want them to represent, or if we don't hold them accountable to representing them, are we acting as a representative democracy? Without the engagement of an informed people, we cease to operate as that representative democracy. I wish more Americans truly contemplated and grasped that. Your participation is necessary. It's both your right and your obligation. But that right and obligation doesn't end with the federal government. See, our system was uniquely designed to keep the power with the people, but how does it do that? It does it through the states. We were fundamentally different from Britain, which was a constitutional monarchy, because they kept power with the king, but we keep the people in direct view. This is why today we see so many differences across all 50 states. I think we can all agree that life in California is very different than life in Tennessee or Texas or any other state. And those differences boil down to the freedom that each state has to pass legislation that is representative of the values and desires of the people who live within that state. But again, as just discussed with the federal government, if the people do not make their voices heard, this process breaks down. Because of our own complacency, states have the potential to be ruled by governors or mayors or other select leaders who can enforce their views and value systems that could completely differ from the will of the majority of the people. This is why it's crucial that you are not only involved in national politics and electing the president, but more importantly, that you're involved in the state and local politics that happen around you. Because you might vote for a presidential candidate who shares your views, but you could live in a state that's completely opposed to them if you don't make them known at the state level. It is only when every citizen of a state participates that the will of the people can be fairly determined, and in turn, the people be fairly governed. Let's put some data behind these ideas. According to Pew Research, in the 2018 midterm election, national voter turnout was 49%. Just 49% of all registered voters in America actually voted for their governors, their attorney generals, their representatives in Congress, and their local offices. In the 2022 midterm election, this statistic had further dropped to just 46%. Half of the country, over half of the country, did not make their voices known on the state and local level. And voter turnout for midterm elections is generally lower than presidential election years. Everyone gets really excited about electing the president. I get it. But even in the 2020 presidential election, voter turnout was still at just 66%. So in what was considered a high turnout election, an entire third of the country's registered voters did not contribute their voices to the leadership in the highest levels of our government. State elections, especially in California, are even lower. In California's most recent election, the March 2024 primary, only 34% of registered voters cast their ballot. 34%. That means that two-thirds of the people in our state were not represented at all. That's insane to me. And you might be wondering, why do primary elections matter? Wouldn't it be the election in November that really matters? That's when we are actually electing the president. Well, again, what this mindset fails to recognize is that the primary election consisted mostly of statewide ballot measures. The presidential primary portion was just one question on my ballot. The rest of my ballot concerns state and local candidates and propositions. In March 2024, California had one proposition, Proposition 1, and it won't show up again on the November ballot. March was the only time for California voters to cast their decision on whether or not it should go into effect. It did pass, but what would you guess? How many votes do you think it would have passed by? It only passed by 28,000 votes. That's a slim margin of victory. And when you take that into consideration with the fact that 14 million registered voters in California didn't even vote on the measure, it really begs the question, do we know what the people of California want? But there's one step further past participation in government, because to truly participate, you must be informed. You may have heard of the concept of informed consent. Informed consent is the idea that a patient cannot actually give permission for a medical procedure or any other medical intervention without full knowledge of the possibilities, the consequences, the outcomes, or the alternatives. If you do not have all the facts before you, it's impossible to make a decision, because if you had all the facts, you might decide differently. There might be options, again, that you just didn't know about and would want to choose. This idea is true with government as well. You must have all of the information, all of the facts. If you don't know who or what it is you are voting for, you're not really participating in government at all. Thomas Jefferson said, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never has and never will be." Think for a moment about the last time you voted. Did you know the names on your ballot? Did you know about the candidate's past history, their track records within government, where they stood on key issues that you care about? Or did you only look to see which had the same political party affiliation as yours and select those candidates? What about the propositions? Did you have an adequate idea of what implications the ballot measures would have on your life, enough so to make an informed decision? Are you aware of key bills that have been passed in your state within the last year? These are all questions meant to persuade you that participating in your federal, state, and local government shouldn't consist of just a quick Google search or an impulsive decision based on what you've seen lately on social media. And I know that the biggest barrier is that this can sound overwhelming. I get it. You have a job. You have a family. You have a life. And the idea of keeping up to date on everything happening in government and politics seems like too much to add on top of all of those day-to-day responsibilities. But I want to persuade you that it doesn't have to be overwhelming. It doesn't have to consume your life and occupy all of your thoughts. It starts with finding the right resources to help you best understand what is going on around you and how you can meaningfully contribute. Small steps toward becoming informed are far better than choosing to disengage entirely. Edmund Burke, who was a member of Parliament in 1776, and he was known for his defense of the American colonies, said that nobody made a greater mistake than he who did nothing because he could only do a little. The truth is that you have the power to elect leaders who are supposed to represent your interests. You have the power to enact, amend, and repeal legislation in your state. This is amazing. This is incredible. This is meant to encourage you. And these are also weighty responsibilities, and so they need to be recognized as such. And so we come back to the initial question, why engage in politics? Well, the truth is that nations don't just exist without the participation of the people. This has always been the case in history. Even the greatest empires fall to other empires, and they easily fall if their own citizens don't stop to consider seriously their own contributions to their government. America is not immune to this. You are not free because there are groups of people in power at the state and federal levels who keep it that way. You're not free because we have a president or a governor who probably know what they're doing. You are free because we as a nation have committed to defending the recognition that all of us are truly created equal and endowed with inalienable rights by our Creator and not by our government. The moment that you personally fail to uphold that commitment, both on a federal and local level, you as much as forfeit your freedoms. But isn't this freedom worth defending and upholding? So here's your call to action. It's time to take seriously the incredible rights fought and won for you by the men and women who came before you. It's time to consider the impact that you have on your government. Regardless of your political positions on high visibility issues like abortion or immigration or all the other controversial political positions you hear about in the news, it's time to ask questions about all of the legislation that affects your state. The state and local elections matter just as much, if not more, because they directly determine the outcome and effect on your life. It's time to become informed. You should not let anyone, not even people who wear the same political party affiliation as you, tell you what you ought to think. Instead, make your own judgments and vote. Now, having established the basic civic responsibility for political engagement, I want to come to a second argument. And this is one that is more personal to me, not just as an American, but as a Christian. Because while all of the above might sound compelling to my American heritage, the question must further be raised, why should Christians engage in politics? After all, I serve a God who is sovereign. He is almighty, he's omniscient, and he's transcendent of time, culture, and government. So why should I or any Christian care about our political freedoms or temporary leaders? Let's start with the foundation of government. Government is first and foremost a biblical concept. Government was enacted by God, and we see in Romans 13, the very famous passage on government, that it was enacted by God for the restraint of evil, the punishment of evildoers, as well as on the positive side, the approval of what is good. And this is foundational, because I think the separation of church and state in America has made us as Christians kind of lazy. We see it as secular, we see it as separate. But God is the one who established government. And so if he established it, we cannot see it as separate from our lives. We have to learn how we are to interact with it. Another step further for why we should care then about government is because the heart of God is for his people and for all who bear his image. Government affects people. Government, politics, and legislation all have very real consequences on the lives of a nation's or state's citizens. We often think about or discuss politics in a high-level, immaterial way, as though it's something that doesn't really have direct bearing on us. But you cannot disengage from politics, because politics will and do have a direct effect on all areas of your life. Politics materialize into legislation, and legislation materializes into outcomes. And these outcomes change the circumstances around you and what you are able to do. Edmund Burke again said, "Bad laws are the worst form of tyranny." Do you as a Christian care about how your government leaders are treating your neighbors? Do you care if your government is upholding righteousness or if it's upholding wickedness? And I want to give an example of a very real life bill that will have effects on you, Christian, in California, to show how this materializes to affect your life. So in California, in 2023, Senate Bill 407 was passed. And this bill requires that anyone who is seeking to become a foster parent needs to off the bat affirm that any potential LGBTQ or transgender identity of the foster child will be affirmed by you as the foster parent. It does not mean that if you are seeking to foster a child who already identifies as those things, that you have to agree to affirm them. It means before even being matched with a child, you have to be willing to say that you agree with California's definitions of affirmation, of sexual orientation, of identity, and what your responsibility as the parent is. And this is regardless of if you are meaning to foster indefinitely or if you're trying to adopt out of the foster care system. Christians who feel called to foster may be denied the ability to live out such a calling if they cannot in good faith say that they agree with the state of California on these issues. You might be willing to love a child regardless of the child's future life decisions. You might be trying to foster or adopt a child who is 6 months old, but you have to agree up front. This is a real bill. This has real implications on you, Christian, and how you can live out your life in ministry in the ways in which God calls you. We all know that we are called to love the orphan. One very practical way to do that is through foster care or is through adoption. And so now California has stepped in and has created a real barrier to being able to live out that calling. And the truth is that there are many other important bills. Legislation directly affects issues like the punishment of crime, the protection of innocent people, the protection of the family unit, which was created by God, and so on. All of this is meant to show you that politics are not abstract. They will have real consequences. And so we follow the thread then, that government was enacted by God, really for the good of his people and for people who bear his image, and government will have a direct effect on how or whether you are able to serve him. Another reason for the Christian's political involvement is the unique nature of our ability to shape our government. When Paul wrote Romans 13, the concept of America had never yet been established in the ancient world. If you think about it, we live in such a unique time and under such a unique system of government. Today, we have the chance to actually shape our leadership and our society. Back then, they did not have any say in their government. How much more responsibility do we have as Christians in America to engage in politics, given that we have the opportunity and right to involvement? The reality is that our leaders are not inevitable. They're not born into power. Our leaders are chosen. And they also don't lead in a vacuum. They're responsible to the people. We as the church are part of that people. And so I would argue that we have even more of a calling to shape our government now than we ever had before. In America, the power has been delegated to the people, written into the very Constitution as being of the people, for the people, and by the people. Paul wrote to churches in his time to submit to their government, to submit to Caesar or to Nero, and they would have no say. And yet they were still encouraged to seek to submit to their leaders and to pray for their leaders and to seek the good of their leaders. But for us in America, it's not just the responsibility of the president in America or other elected leaders to engage in government, but it is as much our responsibility as the people to hold them accountable to their sworn offices and to seeking the good of our common man. Because again, we have this unprecedented say in our government compared to any time in history before us. And additionally, we of all people are most equipped to this work. God has revealed for us his standard of what is good and what is right and what is true. We know these things directly from him. And so we cannot surrender government to only secular ideology. We have to be involved to speak up again for what is truth, for what is righteousness. There's a passage in the Old Testament which I believe makes this clear to us. It's found in Jeremiah 29, verses 4-7. The passage reads, Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon, build houses and live in them. Plant gardens and eat their produce. Take wives and have sons and daughters. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage, that they may bear sons and daughters. Multiply there and do not decrease. But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its welfare you will find your welfare. The context of these verses is given in them. God was sending his own people into exile. He was sending them to Babylon, which would be a hostile and foreign land for them. And he was doing this as a form of judgment of their sin against him. But as he does this, notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't tell them, hold on for the years that you will be there. Wait for the judgment of the wickedness of the Babylonians. Don't get involved. Don't talk to them. Don't worry about their government. Just stay in your communities and don't worry about them. No, he gives them specific instructions to build houses, to plant gardens, to create families, and then to seek the welfare of Babylon. He tells them to set down roots and flourish, and not only to personally flourish, but to seek the good of the city so much that they would see it as their own welfare. These are people who will have no right to a say in their governments. They will have no voice beyond what status they can try to earn through relationships with the king. And I believe that while this passage is not necessarily prescriptive to interacting with government, it does model for us principles that we can apply in our own lives, our own communities, and our own churches today, especially as those with a say in our democratic system. Our reason for political engagement is not just to protect our freedoms for freedom's sake, but to seek the good of those around us. This is why it matters in a state like California. We as Christians cannot complain that our state is opposed to our values, that it does evil things, that it hurts people, and then choose not to get involved. And I just want to pause here and address a common question about this among Christians. Because the ultimate good that you can do for your neighbor is to spread the news of the gospel. Amen and amen. Only the gospel can truly transform our culture. Only the gospel will save. And only the gospel will give you hope regardless of what happens in our societies. All of that's true. But the gospel shapes every aspect of your life. The gospel shapes our relationships. It shapes our work life. It shapes our interaction with our families. And it too shapes political engagement. You don't wake up and say, I can't go to my job today because that's secular and my calling is to share the gospel. You don't say, I can't spend time with my kids and play with them because my calling is to share the gospel. That would be ridiculous. You go to work, you engage with your family, and you do all of those things in a way that is truly changed because of the gospel. And the gospel too will change how we interact politically and why we interact politically. God gave us practical ways to leave an impression on the societies around us. He is the one who first designed for us laws that promote order and justice and fairness and goodness in our societies. And so we don't defend these ideals and these freedoms afforded to us for our own sake. We defend them in order to really defend the heart of God in establishing them. He is a God of order. He is a God of justice. He is a God of abundant blessing and common grace. And so this means that we too seek order and justice and blessing for our country and for our states. So Christian, how do you seek the welfare of the land? We returned to the same actions laid out previously. You have to become informed. You have to find small ways to get involved, and you have to choose to exercise the freedoms you've been blessed with and not take them for granted. This does not mean that you have to run for office, or that you have to go out and campaign, or you have to get signatures for certain bills, or you have to participate in rallies. It is involvement that is much smaller than this that will make all the difference. Because in reality, you cannot advocate for good. You cannot restrain evil if you do not know what is being legislated. Christians of all people should want to speak out when evil is written into law. We want to speak out when injustice is committed against the innocent, when government is hurting its own people. But to be an advocate for the inalienable rights endowed by our Creator, we must first be aware of the threats being leveled against them. And then we need to commit to pray for wisdom and for change. We have no excuse for ignorance. We cannot simply look away. So listener, this is your invitation to join me. Join me here on a weekly basis to take the small step of understanding and caring about what is going on in your state. Regardless of your religious beliefs, I sincerely hope that you will resolve yourself today to uphold your freedoms and seek the good of those around you through the power of being informed, the challenge of critically examining our politicians and government leaders, and the responses of people committed to exercising common sense and decency. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I, like many of you, am a resident of California, and I'm actually a California native. I was born and raised in Northern California, and I moved to Southern California to attend college here. It was in college that I was an accounting and finance major, and I actually currently am an active CPA. I met my husband in college, and we got married in 2022. And the funny thing is, I moved to Oregon for 1 year right after graduating. But when we got married, I decided I really missed the Golden State. I didn't like all of the rain, and I decided to move back. So now we live here, and we both work in accounting by day. But we're also deeply passionate about our local church and politics. We spend a lot of time with our local church community, serving in various ministries on Sunday and throughout the week. And as you can probably tell, my faith absolutely drives who I am and everything that I do. It's been a huge catalyst, even for starting this podcast. Which, speaking of, you might be wondering, what will we be covering in this podcast? If you haven't gathered already from the name and all we've just discussed, this will be a place for you to get informed about what is happening legislatively in California. You may know, we have the election coming up this November, and in California, there are 10 propositions on the ballot. So from now until then, I really want to cover each bill in depth. I want to look at what's being proposed, look at proponents and opposition to each bill, look at the real outcomes each bill will have on life in California should they be passed, and then give common sense responses from a Christian perspective for how we should think about each bill. We'll start there, and after the election, we'll continue to look at bills that have been signed by Governor Gavin Newsom that will take effect in 2025, and then we'll examine how we can be making a true impact on our state. My heart is to help you, as a California resident, maybe as a fellow Christian, as a local community or church member. I want to help you understand what is being proposed by our representatives and how you can get involved. With every episode, there will always be a call to action for how you can make a difference, even beyond voting, because I genuinely believe that we can make a change, but we have to do it together. I realized earlier this year that there were so many bills in California that affected my life and what I was passionate about, as well as the lives of those with similar values to me, and I had no idea about these bills. The bill on foster care that I mentioned earlier is one of them that was really impactful to me. This is as much a journey for me to become informed as it is meant to be helpful for you to become informed and involved. I'm so excited for what the future holds. If you share my vision, my passion, my excitement, then please subscribe to this podcast. You can also head on over to my website at thecaliforniaconversation.com. There, I'll be posting articles weekly that will be directly related to each episode. You can also follow me on social media, and please share this podcast with one fellow Californian who you think it could be helpful to. The future is truly up to all of us together. Welcome to the California Conversation.